Passage 4.
I don't know if we'll be able to spare a whole day at the Ocean Park. We've only got 4 days in Hong Kong, remember?
Oh, right. Well, in that case, I advise you to get there early. It opens at 10 o'clock in the morning on weekdays. Look, I think I've got a plan of the place somewhere. Let me see. Yes, here we are. You can have this.
Thanks.
Okay, I'll show you. Let's start with the lower level. See? Here. You arrive by taxi or bus, or whatever here, on the right. Can you see? That's the bus terminal. And you go in through the main entrance. You could go to Waterworld first, but I think you'd better miss that out, as you're short of time, you said. You see the cable cars? Well, those long lines are the wires, and the little circles are the cars going up and down to the next level. Well, walk past the cable car terminal at the bottom of the plan, and bear right past the waterfall gardens. Actually, have a look in. There are ducks and other birds in the pool there. It's very pretty. Then, you'll see some steps up on the left. Follow that path, and you'll come to the Centenary Garden, which is a good place to stop and take pictures, if you've got your camera. Then, carry on until you're almost at the Children's Zoo. Right? I wouldn't bother to visit the zoo if I were you. It takes quite a long time to walk around. But I do recommend the touch and feed section opposite, as I said. It's great fun for small children.
Okay, so we'll pay a visit there, and then what?
You could come back a different way past the Chinese rock garden. Oh, that's lovely. Do wander around if there's time. Then, go down the steps to the otter pool. You can have a sit down there for a little while and watch the otters messing around in the water. Then, back to the cable car terminal, where you can catch a car to the upper level. The journey takes about 10 minutes, I suppose. It's quite a long way. Now, if you look at the other plan, the one for the upper level, you'll see where you arrive.
Is this the terminal here in the bottom left-hand corner?
Yes, that's right. The fun fair is in the top left-hand corner. Can you see? With the dragon I was telling you about, and the octopus and the spider. Do you think you'll want to go to that?
Well, I think the children are a bit too young, really. But they might enjoy watching other people.
Okay. Well, if you're feeling quite hungry by the time you arrive, which you probably will be, why not have a snack in a Chinese restaurant next to the terminal? When you've finished lunch, I would go to the coral reef first. It's that little building on the left-hand side. That's where you can see fish and other underwater creatures in a kind of natural habitat.
Right, that sounds interesting.
It's lovely. After that, walk up to the dragon and watch people being really scared. Then, you could come down to the Ocean Theater, which is just to the left of the center of the plan, and see a performance of dolphins, or maybe the killer whale. You'll have to check the times for that. There's one at 2 o'clock, I think. I'm not sure about the high diving, but you may be able to see that as well. If there's time, you could also carry on to the right and have a look at Wave Cove. And finally, if you're not too exhausted by then, you could return to the lower level by using the famous escalator. You'd be finished by 3:30 or 4 at the latest.
Right. Well, thanks for all your advice. We'll send you a postcard.
I'll look forward to it.
16. According to one speaker, what could we skip if we are short of time?
17. When does Ocean Park open on weekdays?
18. Where can we see ducks and other birds?
19. Which of the following does not seem quite suitable for very young children?
20. Near which of the following is the Chinese restaurant sited?
Part C. Note-taking and gap-filling.
Another reason for the worldwide use of the English language is its use throughout the Commonwealth, which includes a quarter of the world's people in one-sixth of the world's land area. All of its 49 member states have at some time been under British rule. In some of them, English is the first language. Others, with several different languages of their own, find English the most convenient means of communication, except for small-scale business. Today, the Commonwealth is a loose association of independent sovereign states, nearly all of them members of the United Nations, scattered among the continents and their adjacent lands. British rule still continues in a few groups of islands, all but one of them, too small in population to be independent states, but preferring to continue the British connection rather than to attach themselves to any neighboring states. The only one with more than 30,000 people is Hong Kong, with nearly 6 million. It cannot become independent because its mainland section is part of China, but had been held by Britain on a 99-year lease, which expired in 1997. The transformation of the British Empire into a commonwealth of independent nations began, in part, in 1867 with the establishment of Canada as a fully self-governing country still associated with Britain. Australia and New Zealand followed. With all these, full power was transferred, with agreement on both sides, to the representative institutions of people mostly descended from immigrants from Britain, though part of Canada was French. The new Commonwealth began in 1947 when India and Pakistan became fully independent. India's membership of the Commonwealth was not affected by its decision 3 years later to become a republic. All the major colonial territories in Asia, Africa, and the Caribbean had become independent within 20 years. In every case, power was transferred, with the help and agreement of the British government, to ministries responsible to parliaments elected by universal suffrage, but with guarantees of protection for minorities such as small tribes. One country at first declared itself independent without British agreement. In 1965, Rhodesia had already enjoyed internal self-government for 40 years, but with a regime that, in effect, gave power to the white minority, who were mainly settlers of British origin. The arrangement was objectionable to other countries in the Commonwealth, and the British insisted that it must be changed. When the leaders of the white-dominated regime unilaterally declared their independence, the British government considered the regime to be illegitimate and joined the United Nations in imposing sanctions while refusing to use military force. Eventually, the white leaders agreed to an amended system which would give power to a government elected by equal universal suffrage. An election on this basis gave power to black ministers, and the Republic of Zimbabwe was inaugurated in 1980. In many independent countries of the Commonwealth, the British cultural influence survives, and some of their educational systems still reflect this influence. So too with parliamentary and legal processes. Some send military officers to British colleges for training, but British governments of both parties have regularly avoided any interference with their relations with other states or with their internal politics, although in some cases the original institutions have been fundamentally altered, replaced by military rule or other forms of more or less arbitrary power. In the United Nations, members of the Commonwealth are quite often opposed to one another.
Part D. Listening and Translation. 1. Sentence Translation.
1. I'm phoning about our appointment on the 16th. I'm sorry, but I can't make it. I shall be tied up the whole day.
2. Sales went down by 6,000 units in November, when the Christmas order stopped. They stayed at 7,000 until the end of the year.
3. I have a question about the prices you quoted me. Have you included value-added tax?
4. I spent 10 years of my life as a teacher, and it was during that time that I began to understand the importance of the environmental issues.
5. Suppose you were at a dinner party and people started smoking. Would you take a hard line on it?
2. Passage translation.
1. Well, I think the good points about London is that London is still a very tolerant and very relaxed place. And most people, I find, are very friendly. It's still a very fluid society. If you go to America, you find a much more ghettoized society in terms of races, where you have middle-class black ghettos and middle-class white ghettos, whereas in this society, you don't have that rigid sort of ghettoized society, even in Brixton, which is supposed to be the black area in London. You find sort of middle-class white people and black people living side by side. It's still a much more mixed and heterogeneous society than America, and it is, in many ways, in London, an open and a tolerant society.
2. This morning, I'm going to talk briefly about consumer price changes in 5 major countries during the period 1997 to 1999. Let's look at the United States figures. As you can see, the annual change in consumer prices rose from around 4% in 1997 to just under 6% in 1998, before falling back to around 3% in 1999. Throughout this period, the United States had the highest rate of inflation of the 5 countries considered. Now, turning to France, we can see that consumer prices rose less quickly than those in Britain and the United States throughout this period. Inflation rose to over 3% in 1997 and 1998, before falling back to just over 2% in 1999. Indeed, by 1999, the inflation rate in France had fallen below that in Germany and was now equal to that in Japan. Sample Test 4. Part A. Of the 148 licensed civil aerodromes in Britain, about one-fifth handle more than 100,000 passengers a year each. Of these, 13 handle over 1 million passengers a year each. In 1993, Britain's civil airports handled a total of 113.9 million passengers and 1.4 million tons of freight. Heathrow Airport is the world's busiest airport for international travel and is Britain's most important airport for passengers and air freight, handling 48 million passengers and 846,600 tons of freight in 1993. Proposals have been put forward for a 5th terminal, which will be the subject of a public inquiry and could eventually handle 30 million passengers a year. Gatwick is also one of the world's busiest international airports. 7 airports, Heathrow, Gatwick, Stansted, and Southampton in southeast England, and Glasgow, Edinburgh, and Aberdeen in Scotland, are owned and operated by BAA PLC. Together, they handle about 71% of air passengers and 82% of air cargo traffic in Britain. Many of the other airports are controlled by local authorities, including Manchester, which is the 3rd largest airport in Britain. A total of 14 major local authority airports now operate as Companies Act companies. The government is encouraging their privatization. For example, East Midlands International Airport was sold by its local authority shareholders in August 1993. Belfast International Airport was scheduled to be sold in the second half of 1994. Part B. Passage 1.
First of all, when do people start work in American offices?
Right. Well, the official workday starts at 9 a.m. This should really mean 9 o'clock, not 10 past or half past 9.
Would you say that people work very hard in offices in America?
Well, I don't know about employees in your country, but some nations have a philosophy that you work when the boss is around. And any time he's not there, one can relax by reading the newspaper or whatever one likes doing in a personal way.
And things are different in the States, you're saying.
Well, in America, one is being paid for your time. So employees are expected to find other work if their own desks are clear, or to help someone else with his or her work. But you never sit idle, or doing nothing.
Yes, as the saying goes, time is money.
Exactly. Your employer owns your time while he is paying for you for it. That is precisely what time is money means. And anyway, the boss doesn't ask more of you than he is doing himself. He will probably work through the lunch hour himself, and even take work home at night.
Talking about lunch hours, what about them? Do you have to take them seriously?
Oh, yes, sure. Of course. The employee's lunch hour should be taken within the period allowed, unless you are officially discussing company business. Say, on a business lunch. It's the same, too, with the end of the day. I mean, work until the day officially ends at 5 o'clock, unless you are in an office where flexitime is the accepted practice.
Oh, so you have the flexitime system, do you? I wasn't sure about that.
Oh, yes, sure. Flexible working hours. That is, starting or ending work earlier or later. I know that that is very common in Europe, but here in the USA, it is still relatively new. Certainly, there are a million or so Americans on the system today, and the number is growing. Well, for the same reasons as in Europe, to keep traffic and commuting problems down. And as more women now work, it gives more family time.
Could you say something about contracts of hiring in America, please?
Well, it's different in America from, say, Asia. Perhaps Europe, too. I'm not sure. We are more democratic, I think. It means, perhaps, that we won't develop such a permanent relationship between employer and employee. I know that in some countries, people relax when they have once got a job, because they know they will almost never be fired, unless they do something awful.
You mean that your employer can just fire you in America?
No. There are, of course, legal protections in the USA, so employees cannot be unjustly fired without good reason. Workers must do a good job, produce well, and get along with their colleagues, or they can be let go, as it is called.
From one day to the next, you mean?
Well, it's rarely done without warning, but it is important to remember that in the United States, you are a member of a business firm and not a family. It makes a difference.
I wonder, is the physical or external appearance of office life different from European offices?
Well, I have heard people comment on the informality found in American offices. And this is certainly a little difficult for people who are more used to the hierarchical system to adjust to, of course. But there are some very formal offices, too. Say, in big banks, law firms, and major corporations. But in many establishments, the atmosphere is loose and easy, with a lot of joking and teasing, and wandering in and out of offices among all levels of employees.
Well, that's about it, I think. Oh, except to briefly mention all those coffee breaks I've heard about in the United States.
That's right. Nearly all large offices have coffee wagons that circulate for mid-morning and mid-afternoon coffee breaks. But you should remember that although 15 minutes are allotted twice a day for relaxation and chatter, many employees take coffee to their desks and keep on working. In small offices, the coffee pot is often on all day, and employees take coffee whenever they like, or they can make tea for themselves. It all depends, I suppose.
1. When does the official workday start in American offices?
2. How many minutes a day are the coffee breaks in large American offices?
3. What does flexi time mean?
4. According to the conversation, which of the following statements is true?
5. Generally, what is the conversation about?
Passage 2.
Brussels. A two-day conference on China-Europe economy, trade, and investment opened on Thursday, attended by officials from the European Commission, European parliamentarians, and entrepreneurs from China and the European Union. Leon Britton, Vice Chairman of the Commission, and Wu Yi, Foreign Trade and Economic Cooperation Minister, co-chairs the opening ceremony.
Canberra. Wool prices continued to slide on the Australian wool market this week as the demand remains low. Wool prices closed at 6.28 Australian dollars per kilogram clean in the country's eastern market, the Australian Council of Wool Exporters said in a weekly report. This represented a fall of 36 Australian cents as compared with 6.64 Australian dollars per kilogram last week.
Royal Dutch Shell, which has participated in petroleum exploration and fuel services in China, has entered real estate development in Beijing by buying 17 apartments and 6 villas of the Greenland Garden, a new residential development project near the busy Liangmahe business district for housing its expatriate staff in the capital. The purchase, through the Brooke Hillier Parker, is regarded as having reaffirmed Shell's confidence in China's economy and its role in it.
Tokyo. Prime Minister Tomichi Murayama ordered his administration to look into allegations that Japan's justice minister made a secret deal with opposition lawmakers to avoid parliamentary questions over an unreported loan. Murayama's action followed a report by the national newspaper Yomiuri yesterday that Justice Minister Tamaharu Tadzawa persuaded an opposition lawmaker to influence his colleagues not to question Tadzawa's unreported loans of 200 million yen from a religious sect.
Hong Kong. Women in Hong Kong tend to buy more cosmetics than those in the United States, Britain, France, and Germany, according to the latest survey conducted by Euromonitor, a noted international market investigation body. Each woman in Hong Kong spent about 1,933 Hong Kong dollars on cosmetics last year, taking the lead among the economies in East and South Asia.
6. Who chaired the opening ceremony of the conference?
7. How much did wool prices close at on the Australian market this week?
8. What has Royal Dutch Shell done recently?
9. What did the Japanese Prime Minister order his administration to investigate?
10. In which of the following countries or regions women tend to use more cosmetics? Passage 3. Hello, this is Mr. Montgomery speaking. I specialize in litigation. I understand you have a problem with a builder. Did you tell me about it?
Yes, I hope you can help me. I've had my living room decorated, and the painter has made rather a mess of it, really. And I don't quite know what I should do now. I don't know whether to pay him or not.
Did he give you a quote?
Yes, he did. He gave me a quote before he started the work.
How much was it for?
He said it would be about 500 pounds.
Well, did he say exactly 500 pounds, or round about 500 pounds, or 500 pounds plus VAT?
I think it was 505 pounds plus VAT.
What did you instruct him to do?
To paint the living room walls and the ceiling, and to paint the sort of paintwork as well. You know, the skirting boards and things like that.
And what's the problem?
Well, he's made an awful mess of it, really. I mean, he had to paint the walls yellow, but he's managed to paint them two different shades of yellow, really. So when you walk down it, it looks as if one wall's a different color from the other one. He didn't mix it well enough, so they don't match very well. That's one thing. And another thing is that the line where the walls meet, the ceiling isn't straight. So sometimes the paint goes over onto the ceiling, and sometimes it doesn't. It looks terrible.
So you're unhappy with it?
I'm unhappy with it, yes. And he also kept spilling paint all over the carpet because he didn't have enough sheets to put down on the floor. So it's made rather a mess of the carpet, and I don't know if I can get that cleaned or not.
Have you spoken to him about this?
Yes.
And what's he said?
He doesn't seem to think there's anything wrong with it. He seems to think I'm being very fussy.
Right. Well, your position is this. You are in the strongest position because he wants your money, and you haven't paid him anything yet. My advice to you is not to pay him anything, to tell him that you've taken advice and that you require the walls to be done again in the shade that you wanted to be done, that you require him to clean the carpets, and that you require him to repaint the ceiling and the wall where they meet, such that the line becomes a straight line and not a wavy line. He may or may not decide to do that. If he says, no, I've done a good job, then, if he's in your house and you're worried about him being there, I suggest you ask for his invoice. And then, when his invoice comes, you can write to him and you can tell him that you're not happy with it and you're not going to pay him.
So you don't think I should pay him anything then?
I don't think you should pay him anything because he hasn't done what you asked him to do, and he therefore appears to be in breach of contract. But not only that, he appears to have damaged your carpet, and you may have to pay somebody to have that carpet cleaned. Of course, another possibility is that you could just negotiate a reduction, get him off your hands, and, with the difference, employ somebody else to put it right, and somebody else to clean the carpet. But you'd obviously have to have somebody to come in to give you an estimate prior to your negotiations with that builder to agree a reduction.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much.
11. Which of the following did the caller have decorated?
12. How much did the painter ask for the job?
13. Which of the following is not a complaint made by the caller?
14. Why did the caller turn to the telephone legal advice line for help?
15. What does Mr. Montgomery advise her to do?
Bye.